I have sciatica, so I may need to sit down partway through, but we're going to give this a try. So I'm, you know, it's, you're told you should never start your talk with a disclaimer, but I'm a rule breaker, so I'm going to make my disclaimer, which is that when we did these abstracts 9 months ago, I had these ambitions that I was going to prove, you know, the sort of lack of ethics in the entire system. And, you know, what was I thinking, right? I have 11, 12 minutes, right? So anyway, bear with me. I'm going to skip through some slides. If you give me your card or your email after, I'll email you the slides. If you paid the $50 for the extra, you'll get the slides. But I got to keep us moving. So I have no relationships to disclose. I'm going to talk a little bit about how we try to facilitate change in the health promotion professions a little bit before I get into talking about the health at every size model. And then I'm going to try to mush it all together, all in 11 minutes. All right, so we're moving away from the old school health promotion methods of compliance and adherence and focusing on trying to get people to do things, right? I mean, that's old school health promotion is about getting people to be healthy as the way we as the experts define what health is and what healthy behaviors look like and what's important for people to focus on. Running people through those stages of change, Prochaska, right? It may be effective for short-term change, even for long-term change, but whose agenda are we pushing with our stages of change? So here we basically have a role of an expert preaching to a client or a patient. New school health promotion, we're clearly changing that paradigm, and rightly so, but our new jargon, our new buzzword is empowerment, which we don't really define very often. What does it mean? Whose power is being given to who and for what, to do what? We have these new techniques like social marketing, but I would suggest to you that a lot of social marketing is simply getting people to do what we want them to do with hipper methods, right? And so it's really what I call being an expert in sheep's clothing. And so I would like for all of us to dialogue around moving beyond this kind of top-down model of change, whatever area we are in the health professions, and to move towards what I'm going to call middle-out change. So what's like the first, where do we start with this? What's the first project? And what I would like to do, instead of taking us, we're going to have a few first principles. Of course, first do no harm and several others. But one of our first principles should be that everything we do should be about helping people to flourish. That it should be about helping people to live well, joyously, thriving, whatever that means. And that's on an individual basis, on a community basis. And as I'm going to talk about in a minute, who defines what flourishing is, right? It should be the individual or the community who defines what flourishing is. So a middle-out model, whether you're working with individuals or with communities, and I've got the word empower here. I tried to change it before. I didn't save it properly, and I apologize for that. I had some great dialogues down on the floor of the expo booth where I'm actually even rethinking the word empower here, but it's there for now. But we want to work with people to facilitate their own journey, not our journey for them, but their journey. We want to trust people's own lived experience and the wisdom that they have from that experience, the wisdom that comes from their body, from their culture, from their, you know, whatever it is that gives them their wisdom, not our wisdom. So I did this little model of top-down health promotion. This looks probably very familiar to a lot of you, right? And I think this is a critique that most of us, you know, can agree with. This is the idea that government agencies, employers, health promotion professionals are defining what health is and then telling people what they should be doing to get to the goal that we've just defined. With the middle-out health promotion, you put the individual and the community at the center and you let them determine what health is and what they need to do in order to be healthy. And then our job is to give them the resources and the support and the services that they need to get there. So what do we mean by empowerment anyway? I think we can look for true, what I'm going to actually reframe as a repowerment as opposed to empowerment. The coaching model, and when you work with individuals, is an excellent source. And I mean real coaching models, not the coaching that gets called that by employers and insurance companies and HMOs, which is really experts in sheep's clothing, right? It's hiring someone and training them on Prochaska and then saying, go get these people to comply with what we think is good if you have prediabetes or whatever else. So in a coaching model, you always start with the client's agenda. So you're always starting with the person who's being coached, what's important to them, and what do they want to work on, and you know, what do they need to flourish, to live well, whatever their goal is. You're always looking to the inner wisdom of the client. Coaching is about asking powerful questions. That's the essence of coaching. It's not about telling people what to do. It's about asking them questions that will facilitate their wisdom emerging. So then feedback is the primary source of ongoing wisdom, as opposed to a failure to comply being the labeling of someone not doing what they said they were going to do or not, you know, meeting a goal. It's feedback. And so you have this ongoing dialogue. And it's by definition respectful of diversity because no one's imposing an agenda. It always comes from the individual. Excuse me. With communities, it's similar, but on a community basis. So the wisdom is coming from the community and the community members. And you wind up with programs and campaigns that really reflect community values. And, you know, I think you actually, when we move to a true model like this, we'll see much higher efficacy and much higher participation because we'll have campaigns that really mean something to the community. So here's the rub. We have to give up power that we've been kind of hoarding to ourselves as health professionals. And so empowerment, the reason I've got a problem with the word is that it implies that the power is ours to give. There's an agency problem with it. So if we really believe in the power of the individual, then we have to think about repowering and redistributing the power. We can always be the experts on the health content. We can always be experts on implementation, evaluation, but we can never be the experts on what is true or what is right for an individual or for a community. That's the bottom line for me. There's the first principle right there. I can't be the expert on you, right? And I would resent the hell out of you guys telling me you were the experts on me. And that's what it comes down to. And when we tell people you need to lose weight, aren't we doing that, right? Tying in the health at every size. Bringing it in. All right. So the health at every size approach is very complicated on some levels. There's a ton of evidence. Okay, 5 minutes. There's a ton of evidence. I've put it into an appendix because I don't have time to go through all of it. But if you pull up my slides, and I'd be happy to email them to you, I've included a lot of references and a lot of evidence that there are serious problems with our approaches by doing anti-obesity campaigns, using the BMI as a measure of health, doing weight loss programming, et cetera. So what I want to, I'm just trying to like one slide to boil up the essence of health at every size, that body diversity is seen as both a reality and a value, that we don't norm it, say that there's a norm that's desirable above other body sizes, that health is a multidimensional concept that implies also that one dimension of it may be more important to me than it is to you. So by having multiple dimensions, by allowing health to be this sort of fluid, open concept, we are automatically opening up the way for a middle-out approach. And then also the essence of a Hayes approach is that it's weight neutral, that we assess health always in weight neutral terms. And that when we do change behavior or attitude in order to improve health, that's great, but it's never done for the purpose of weight loss. I shouldn't say that's great. It's great if it's coming from the individual or the community. All right, so the critique that the health at every size approach brings to health promotion is that despite the fact that we have significant and persuasive evidence that BMI doesn't predict health well, that metabolic fitness is independent of size, and that weight-based approaches cause all kinds of harm in terms of weight cycling, in terms of weight stigma, in terms of risks of eating disorder, in terms of bullying, all kinds of problems. We still do it, right? We've got all kinds of evidence that it's a bad approach, but we're still doing it, or most of us are. So here's some examples. I don't know how well the light shows here, but you know, some of these things are pretty horrifying. You name it, fear, shame, blame, disgust, it's all there, right? And I'm just saying we can do better, and I think most of us would agree. So from an ethical point of view, I have two main points. One of them is that an anti-obesity campaign is by definition a top-down approach. I would guarantee that no one ever went to a community and ask them what's really important to you guys in terms of flourishing, and they said, we want you to lower our average BMI from 29 to 28. Like, whoever, you know, said that. And then that a Hayes approach is consistent with a middle-out approach. And then the other ethical critique here is that there are health risks associated with the weight-based approach. Why do we do it? How is that possibly justified? Can't go through this list, but it's long, all right? Physiological, psychological health risks, functional consequences, social consequences. This list is really, really scary. Meanwhile, what are the risks of a weight-neutral approach? This is where I channel Ben Stein from Ferris Bueller, right? Anyone?
Yeah.
What are the risks of doing all the things that we know that promote health without focusing on weight? Without focusing on weight? I would submit to you there are none. So this is a nice quote from Lucy Aframore. She's a dietitian from the UK talking about the problems with the weight-centered approach. I'm not the first one to make this critique. This is 15 years ago in the New England Journal of Medicine editorial on the problems with the weight-based approach, calling upon physicians to just stop it. It hasn't happened, obviously. So if you had a treatment or a medication or a program that was somewhat effective in the short term, but 90% ineffective in the long term, it had significant associated side effects and risks, caused the individuals that you gave the treatment to feel shame, guilt, and self-loathing, and inflicted stigma and bias on 2/3 of the U.S. population, would you still recommend it, right? So I guess where I'm coming from is because anti-obesity campaigns are top-down and because they're dangerous, a Hayes approach is where we need to be going. When we adopt evidence-based practices, when we stop trying to be experts in people's lives, when we shift away from top-down, when we recognize the ethical problems of pursuing weight loss, when we recognize that intentional weight loss has never been and never will be an evidence-based protocol, and when we recognize all the harms, we wind up at health at every size. So I just wanted to, my last slide is just some folks with larger bodies doing what I would call flourishing. So, thank you.
Are there any initial questions?
Yeah.
I'm not laughing at you.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, one of the biggest issues is physicians, or for anyone who's coming from that paradigm, will say, but obesity is so unhealthy. And, you know, it's this sort of constant refrain. And what I would ask you to do is to go and look and show me where obesity causes any of the diseases that you say that it does, because there is no evidence that it does. There's a lot of correlation but correlation's not the same thing as causation. There's also, you know, a health at every size approach doesn't mean that you don't address chronic disease. It doesn't mean that you don't address various health problems that have been correlated with obesity or high BMIs. I don't like the phrase obesity, but that's the medical term that's being used. So, okay, but, you know, baldness is associated with high rates of heart disease, right? We don't go around giving people hair transplants and trying to cure heart disease, right? So correlation's not the same thing. So we address the health conditions without talking about weight. We address people's blood glucose if we need to. We address heart disease if we need to. So that's where I, when I encounter the pushback, that's often where we wind up talking. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay.
Look at all these wonderful appendices.